Morning. May it please the court. In December 2007, petitioner Southern California Edison made a rate filing covering new transmission projects with a base rate of return that was 50 basis points below the midpoint of a group of comparables. At that time, FERC had consistently used the midpoint both for individual utilities applying alone and for a group of utilities applying together as ISO members. Excuse me?
Individual electric utilities?
Individual electric utilities. That's correct, Your Honor. 3 years later, FERC rejected that filing and lowered it by 200 basis points. FERC gave two reasons. One was to reflect the median of a group of comparables, and the second was to reflect the decline in Treasury bond yields in 2008.
It may be the same question Judge Ginsburg was coming to, but had FERC ever used the median measure as opposed to the midpoint prior to this?
At that time, in the electrical industry, it was using, for the last 6, 7, 8 years, had been using the midpoint.
Had they ever used the median in the electrical industry before this case?
No.
They had not.
Well, before the filing in 2007, there were precedents between 2007 and 2010 when they made this decision where they started using the midpoint.
I think that's what we're asking for, if they were not similarly situated entities.
Right. Well, they
had interval.
They had started, Your Honor, using it for single electrical utilities. There were two cases that came down before this case did, but after this one was filed. FERC gave two reasons, and I mentioned both of them. Both of them are arbitrary, and both of them are inconsistent with the statute. Let me start with the nature of the filing. It was made under Section 205 of the Federal Power Act. As this court pointed out in Atlantic City Electric, FERC can reject a filing made under Section 205 only if it finds that the changes proposed by the utility are not just and reasonable. In this case, FERC never made that finding, that is, that the midpoint was not just and reasonable, and it didn't do it in the prior ones that it cited either. There's no quote in the FERC brief to that effect.
All right, so the response in part is that, I just want to be clear about this. FERC talks about discretion, and at least my understanding of what they're talking about is that you're right that they have to determine whether in Section 205 the proposed rate is just and reasonable, but it has discretion to determine the methodology by which it's going to determine whether the proposed rate is just and reasonable.
FERC does have discretion in the methods that it's used, but it has to reach the conclusion that the proposed rate is not just and reasonable.
So if it says that it has determined that the median is the methodology it has determined it will use for a single electric utility filing. And just in my hypothetical question, it explains why, et cetera. And it rejects your proposed rate on the ground that it's using the midpoint. Is that both arbitrary and capricious and contrary to the statute?
The discretion doesn't extend so far as to say, we reject your methodology out of hand because it's not the same as our methodology.
Well, my hypothetical is they gave explanations as to why they preferred their methodology over yours.
If they can show that that methodology leads to a result that is not just and reasonable, then they can discard some other methodology. But if they're just saying one methodology is preferable to another is without getting to the level of what is just and reasonable, then they can't do it.
Reasonable seems to be a word that cries out for discretion on the deference to the agency's decision. If they have determined that the most reasonable way of deriving the rate in the case of the electrical filings is the use of the median as opposed to the midpoint, why isn't it within their discretion to say that a different method that gives a different result is then not sufficiently reasonable to be sustained?
Well, they may be able to say that some other result, some other method and some other result are unreasonable, but they haven't said it here. They haven't said this is unjust and unreasonable, and the reason they haven't is because they have their own precedent standing in the way, because they've said that for a group of electrical utilities applying together as an ISO, we're going to give them the midpoint.
Well, but they say your client is not similarly situated to a group, since your client is filing singly.
But they don't identify any relevant fact or characteristic. There are individual utilities in the group. Our utility is a member of an ISO, just like those utilities are. They have to take it a step further. They can't just sort of in a circular fashion say, well, because you're single and they're in a group, we're going to do it differently. They have to say, why is that relevant? And they didn't do that.
They do, in fact, give a reason why they prefer, why the use of the median is preferable to the midpoint, in that it accounts for more companies. Now, that does leave hanging the question that you are raising as to why that would not also be true of in utilities filing as a group.
What's
in fact, it would appear that there's a possibility they're wrong about it being a good idea to do it that way for the group, but they have explained something for the single.
And we were at an anterior point when you jumped to that, or maybe we did.
I did it.
But the anterior point is, I would need to be clarified, if you don't mind, before we move on. Has we ever said that the commission has to find some component of a proposed rate is unjust and unreasonable?
In this case, it doesn't matter, because the only component that is in contest is this component. So,
all right. Does it follow from your position then that no matter what method you used, as long as the result was within the zone of reasonableness, they had to approve it?
Yes.
So you could just take the highest rate within the pre-established zone?
Well, no, that's not what I mean. As long as a result is reasonable.
Well, if there's a zone of reasonable rates, doesn't it follow that every rate in that zone is reasonable?
Well, that's not a contention we're making here. I mean, that's
no, but I think it's the inevitable implication of what you're asking us to do.
No, and that's not what we're asking you to do, because here we're saying the midpoint is reasonable because it was used for a group, the commission, and this court found that it was reasonable for a group. To take every point within that zone, that the zone has a name, the zone of reasonableness, that it comes out of history, but it's developed as the product of looking at a whole large group, in our case, a large group of comparable utilities.
You're asking us to say, I grant you, in this case, you're not asking us to say, since the result was within the zone, that should have been the end of the matter. But you are asking us to say that the commission had to find that a component was unjust and unreasonable because it couldn't find that the rate was unjust and unreasonable because it was in the zone.
No, it can find either one. I mean, it didn't find either that the component was unreasonable or that the rate was unreasonable. It has to find something unjust and unreasonable, and it didn't do that.
All right. If they couldn't find the rate unjust and unreasonable, correct?
Well,
because it was within the zone.
That's not the reasoning that we're presenting. We're saying it couldn't find the rate unreasonable because it had already covered the ground on midpoint, both for single utilities and then for a group, and maintained in this court that the midpoint would be fine for a group that was diverse in its risk.
So you're saying it has to find one or the other, either the methodology or the resulting rate, and it couldn't find the resulting rate unreasonable, so you're saying it has to find, have had to have found the methodology unreasonable, which it didn't do.
Well, I agree with it didn't do.
It said only that it preferred something else. So this wasn't the best. This wasn't.
It didn't find the rate, the end result rate, unreasonable.
Correct.
Not because it fell within the zone. It just didn't find it. There's no place.
They
where
stopped after finding the methodology was.
That's right.
That they didn't like the methodology.
Yeah, and I think history.
You have any case in which we've ever prescribed or required the commission before it rejects a component of the rate making to determine that component is unjust and unreasonable.
I think
the answer is no.
No.
Okay.
I think in this case the attack was made on the component. Originally, we presented the rate, and the commission itself said these rates fall within the zone, if you want to put it that way, but we're going to put this down for paper hearing. And people commented, and they attacked the component, and they said you did it in a wrong way, and therefore your result must be wrong, and your end result must be wrong. But they didn't say anything was unjust and unreasonable. They said this is a preferable method, and we're attacking that approach of saying one method is better than another method. But I think the core of it is...
Suppose that some less responsible utility had said, our method is to take the highest rate within the zone, and here's the resulting rate, and the commission says that's not a reasonable way to proceed. It says that's not a preferred way to proceed. Is that not within their discretion to say we're not going to tolerate that?
I think they have to find that the rate was unreasonable. They could, under your hypothetical.
They couldn't have if it's in the zone, right?
No, I didn't say that. I think that's the assumption.
But I can't get around it, and you don't seem to give me any precedent for getting around it.
Well, the problem here is not that it was within the zone. The problem is that it was developed with a methodology that was attacked but was not shown to be unjust and unreasonable.
Could my proposed hypothetical methodology perhaps be shown to be unjust and unreasonable? Choosing the highest rate within the zone? That's my methodology.
Yes.
That could be shown to be unjust, even though it produces a rate within the zone.
Yes. Yes.
Why? Because they don't like it. They think it's not preferable.
I think the commission could fairly reason that some rate within the zone, less than the full zone, is the just and reasonable rate. It does not have to accept the premise that the entire zone, which here is 800 basis points wide, is just and reasonable. And that's not been our contention. It's not in our brief. The heart of our contention is that our use of the midpoint was attacked, even though the commission was using exactly that method for groups and had previously used it for individual utilities.
By the time of the decision in this case, there have been at least two other cases using the median for individual filers, right?
Right.
Okay.
That's correct. But not at the time we filed.
But
those cases haven't been fully reviewed. And the question is whether those cases in this case are right and can be right when the commission is currently using the midpoint for a group. And I think...
I'm not sure why it could not be the converse possibility that the commission is wrong when it's using the midpoint for the group. If you're not talking about similarly situated, you have two others, at least, like yourself, who have been treated the same way. They are doing something different with groups for reasons that are a little bit opaque, but I don't know why that causes you to win this decision if they're doing something wrong on that other group over.
Well, their reasoning on the group and the midpoint is already, they've already expressed a view that because it emphasizes the endpoints of the full range, it is appropriate for a diverse group, the top and the bottom and the middle. And this court sustained that. So I don't think that undoing that is the way to go at this point. The question is, if it's okay for the highest risk utility within a group and the lowest risk utility in a group, which the commission itself called a diverse group, why would it not be okay for
essentially that they give a reason here, though, don't they? The commission offers a reason. It doesn't just say because we said so. They offer a reason, right?
They offer reasons, which I think, Your Honor,
the reason being that it gives greater weight to more utilities' history, right?
Right. And okay. And Your Honor made the next point as well, which was that is exactly the reason that is attacked by the commission itself in the Midwest ISO case, the one involving the group. The commission and then this court said no, that's we're not going to pay attention to that here. We're going to give the midpoint anyway. This court in Canadian Petroleum, Association of Canadian Petroleum Producers, said that it really wasn't true that the midpoint only used 2 points.
Right.
It used but all the points.
It is true that the median gives more weight to more data than is the case if you use the midpoint.
And they talk about statistics and the central tendency.
Yeah.
All that.
The median gives more weight to more data than the midpoint does. The midpoint, in a sense, provides some weight to the companies that are not the endpoints, but it does not provide the same weight that would be given to, in the median calculation. If it did, then we wouldn't have this case.
The way I look at it, each of them gives some weight to points that are not the central points, and some more weight to certain points. In the case of the midpoint, it's the points on the end, but they're determined by everything in the middle. In the case of the median, the 2 points at the center are determined by everything on the wings. So it seems to me they're parallel, and I can't really get into which one gives more weight. In any event, this court got over those issues in this prior decision, and so did the commission. And now it's saying the very same issues that it rejected as concerns and those in that case are going to stop it from doing so here. And the question is, well, why? You've already rejected that.
I want to ask you a question about your second argument.
Yes.
All right. The commission's response, basically, as I read it, is essentially, it doesn't matter that your expert's testimony was not admitted because we have this position, this policy, that in the long run, using these treasury bonds is the best barometer for what's happening. And we explained all that in rehearing, in the rehearing order. So even if we had had Dr. Hunt's testimony, it wouldn't have changed our position, in effect. Isn't that what the commission's saying?
But we never had an opportunity to make an argument that you should change your position and force the commission to deal with the facts as Dr. Hunt presented them, which is a...
But you did make all your arguments. You weren't Dr. Hunt, but you made all those arguments, and the commission responded to them.
But the commission didn't have to respond to the facts of divergent trends between the private cost of capital and the public cost of capital, and that even in those circumstances, it remained a valid indicator and a rational proxy for the commission to be using. The commission didn't do that because
it
eliminated the facts.
It said over time.
It did say over time, but it didn't deal with the specific circumstances and the egregious circumstances that were in front of it, and that was wrong. I'll reserve the remainder of my time. Thank you.
May it please the court. This court and the Supreme Court have often said that it's the commission's job to take the general just and reasonable standard, which is vague, and turn it into dollars and cents. And that when the commission's acting in this kind of central rate-making responsibility, it has a lot of discretion, and the court is not going to substitute its judgment, as long as the commission gives a rational basis for what it's doing. In this case, the commission gave reasons for what it was doing, it explained what it was doing, and the commission should be affirmed.
Well, it said that it had that the method being proposed by the utility here was not the best, had a few other criticisms of it, but they were all conclusory. It didn't say it was unjust and unreasonable, correct? It just said you all preferred something else.
It didn't come out and use that magic term. But in this case, the commission was applying a policy. And the policy itself established that from now on, in cases involving single utilities of average risk, we were going to use the median because it was the best representation of central tendency. And having established the policy, I don't think the commission is required to make a specific finding each time. It's made the finding. It said in an adjudication, it wasn't in a rulemaking, but this court has said that doesn't matter. It explained why it is just and reasonable to use the median.
The policy was adopted in the two intervening cases, is that right?
Well, actually, I don't think that's true. I think if you look at the history, I think Mr. Call is kind of sliding over some of it. In the traditionally, if for the past years prior to 2004, the commission used the midpoint for single utilities in the electric industry and the median for single utilities in the gas industry. In the Midwest ISO case that this court affirmed in Kentucky, in that order, the commission said, "Well, you know, we have to rethink this. That the we're certainly going to use the midpoint for a diverse group of utilities, and we'll get to why that's reasonable. In fact, in the Kentucky case, the court acknowledged that these are two different situations, and the commission has expressly distinguished between them. So when the first electric case involving a single utility of average risk came up after that in 2008, the commission used the median. And since then, it has always applied the median for a single utility of average risk in electric and gas because there are no differences in the industries that would require a different method for that purpose. So the policy developed, the commission explained the development, the court acknowledged in Kentucky that it was developing, and since then it's been consistently applied as recently as 2012. So I don't think there's any problem there. In terms of
it's never been tested, though, in court. It's not been in court before, the policy, correct?
No, this particular policy is not. The mirror image that the midpoint is best for a diverse group of utilities, mm-hmm. that was tested.
However, that doesn't do anything to support your position in this case.
Well, it does.
If the court had come in and said it is absolutely correct that you have to use the midpoint for a group application, that is no precedent at all for using the median for single
application. No, but the commission explained, and the court actually did acknowledge the difference, that for a single utility, we're looking at a range of numbers and we're trying to get to the central tendency. And under the laws of statistics, that better expresses the central tendency.
That's the difficulty I have is, since that is the laws of statistics, why is that not equally true if they had applied as a group?
Well, that's what we want in Kentucky.
Why is that not equally true if they apply as a group?
Well, because...
Kentucky's been decided.
I understand.
And tell me why, as a matter of first principle, because it makes sense to use midpoint for the group app.
In the Kentucky case, it was a diverse group of utilities.
Kentucky. Tell me about his first principle, why it makes sense to use midpoint for a group application as opposed to a median.
Because in a diverse group of utilities, any number of utilities that are in that group, they're getting a single rate of return. These are diverse, as the commission explained in the order and the rehearing order, these are different companies with different growth rates, different projections, and they're asking for a single...
But if they had applied singly, they would have been determined on median. If you put them together in a group, you apply midpoint, and you're telling me something that sounds like a non sequitur.
It's not just the zone we're talking about here, it's the application of the companies. We have a single company here.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's the given we start with.
That's the given we start with.
We have a group
If we had a group of companies, we would have a different situation because...
Because there would be a group. But why does
Because...
Why does it follow from that the midpoint is the better indicator rather than the median if you do mischief in company as opposed to by yourself?
Because the midpoint is better statistically to look at give more weight to the range of numbers. And when you're finding a rate of return for 19 companies as opposed to one company, you want to give more weight to the range of the numbers. Whereas statistically, use the median, and it shows the central tendency better. And with one company, that's what we're looking at. And that's based on the laws of statistics, Your Honor. And So I believe it has a rational basis.
That one, was the one company in the proxy group for the group rate?
The group rate, you know, there's some confusion about that. It was a proxy group, but it was also the companies that the rate was going to apply to.
What, you mean the parent companies?
No, all the actual companies that were getting the rate of return, if you look at that case.
Okay, so the proxy group wasn't identical to the application group, was it?
I believe it was.
Oh, really?
Yes. That's my reading of that case.
I thought it dealt with the parent companies that were publicly traded.
That's not my understanding.
Okay, I'll check that. What does central tendency mean? It's not an economic term on my knowledge.
It's a statistical term, apparently. And the commission did cite some statistical treatises that indicate that that is the case.
Okay. And where will we find that? They did so in this record?
Yes.
Oh, okay, where? Good, where?
In the discussion in the first order, I'll give you the JA pages.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, it must be in the rehearing order. It's on pages 81 of the JA, 81, 82, 83. There's a long discussion of the use of statistics, and the cases that we cite there, Transcontinental and Northwestern, actually cite statistical treatises.
Okay, I've read these pages. I didn't see the statistics. So they're in the cases that are cited. The cited cases cite the treatises. Is that it?
They definitely do. I thought we had actually cited them here as well. If you look at those pages of Transco and Northwestern, they cite two different specific treatises.
Okay.
I could find those pages for you. But
Well, that's okay. We can do that.
We definitely do cite statistical treatises that make that point. And the Northwestern case and the Transco case discuss it in some detail. And then in this case, we rely on Northwestern and Transco for that point.
Now, the point that, is it for the point that the median is appropriate for the group, or is it the point that the mid, pardon me, yes.
The median is appropriate for the single utility.
For the single, and
yes.
In other words, those treatises actually make the distinction. They don't deal with just one side of this.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
That's my understanding.
That was really carefully worded there, counsel. That was my understanding.
Well, certainly the commission read the treatises that way.
Okay.
In terms of the Mr. Cole's point that there's no just and reasonable finding, I guess we've dealt with that. And of course, in a Section 205 case, we can adjust the rate. And this court has never said we couldn't. We can adjust the elements of the rate.
Oh, okay. You're still
the elements of the elements of the rate.
We have some instances where we've said that was okay.
Well, in Western Resources, it was a Section 4, Section 5 case. I know that you actually, one of the points the court made was, you know, adjustments in rates are one thing, but actually adjusting elements of the rate is one thing, changing the rate is another. That's the most recent for Section 4, Section 5.
Well, I'm not sure I get that. Did we approve the specifically a change in the methodology that was disputed, saying that's okay?
Well, no. There, the commission had changed the whole rate. And
first finding the proposed rate was unjust and unreasonable?
Well, it didn't. It didn't. It should have used Section 5. That was one of those Section 4, Section 5 Natural Gas Act cases. But this is a different situation. This is a situation where all we're doing is applying a consistent policy to adjust the rate within the zone of reasonableness.
Well, then it's a consistent policy, isn't the end of the... If that were the objection or the sole objection, it would be one thing, but the objection is in part that the policy you're applying consistently is inconsistent with the authorization to reject a proposed rate, which is limited to find
right,
the rates unjust.
Reject, yeah, but this is an adjustment of the rate within the zone of reasonableness, and this court has never, as you pointed out, Judge, said that the commission can't do that in a 205 case. And it routinely happens. On the updating issue, the commission also applied a policy, and this is a longstanding policy, a 25-year policy, that Edison was well aware of as a participant in commission proceedings.
I was frankly surprised, Mr. Super, that your brief doesn't even cite the APA. Their objection is the APA procedure prescribed.
Well, that became their objection more in their reply brief. And the fact is, there was kind of a shifting ground on their...
You're not saying it's forfeit, are you?
No, not at all. But I think it's very curious that they can claim a lack of notice when the commission, they made their argument.
Is, as I understand it, that when they file their briefs in May, all right, essentially the data wasn't even available, all right? By the time the commission took notice of the 10-year bonds, the world had changed. And your brief says, well, we've been doing this for 25 years. Well, they point out that, you know, the last time there was this kind of change, it was more than 25 years ago. And this is such a dramatic situation, and that we have held pre-APA, and then the APA comes along, that if the agency is going to take notice of something, the opposing party should have an opportunity to respond to it. And your argument, I gather, is that they should have anticipated the market downturn and argued in May that don't use the 10-year Treasury bond?
No. Our argument on the notice issue is that Edison did get a chance to make its argument. And if you look at rehearing order, as you mentioned before, Judge Rogers, at the JA 86 to 89, the commission dealt with the argument. This was not just the commission ignored the argument and said we're going to apply a policy without paying attention to your argument. It took into account the argument and rejected the argument. So there's no notice issue.
And
I want to point out one other thing. In their briefs in May before the commission, interestingly, at JA 480, Edison makes the argument that the tendency of the Treasury bonds is going the wrong direction to make it a reliable barometer. So the argument was already there. The situation got worse, and we acknowledge that. But the argument was already there in the record.
To the extent the commission's rationale here is that we've decided that this 10-year bond index is a reliable barometer of overall market conditions.
Right.
Market could tank, and the commission would be still taking.
Well, but we gave two reasons why we were going to apply the policy here, in spite of the evidence.
I'm looking at those reasons.
Okay. Well, one is that
we've done it for more than 25 years.
No. But there are the two other reasons. One is that it's a simple way of updating.
Of course.
Yep. Without reopening the record, we're going to let companies come in and say you have to reopen the record after the close of the record, we'll never get these cases done. And the second reason, I think personally, is more important. The adjustment was within the zone of reasonableness. And this court
has... So you could choose any rate within the zone of reasonableness?
We can use... Well, here we applied our policy to put the rate within the zone of reasonableness consistent with our policy. So it's not just any rate within the zone. It's a rate consistent with the policy within the zone. So it's not the same as saying any rate.
I appreciate the problem of inviting objection and of right under 556 every time you apply this policy, because many times it's going to be partially or completely after the period when the record closed. It doesn't have to be, but I gather that's not unusual.
This is for a locked-in period, and everybody knew it was going to be. The record was going to close later.
Right, and there was a two-year gap between the closing of the record and the issuance of the decision.
Right.
All right, so there's going to be some post-record development that's going to be noticed. And I think in Union Electric we suggested maybe a rule would be helpful here. But even if you had a rule as opposed to a policy, either way, there are going to be efforts, they're unavoidable, efforts to supplement the record on the basis of an argument that the locked-in period or the period chosen for examining changes in the 10-year Treasury rate was somehow unusual.
Mm-hmm.
It's unavoidable. Although you might have a rule that said something like, we're not going to entertain such arguments if there's less than, say, 50 basis points of variation.
We have a rule that says we're not going to entertain such arguments if we're within the zone of reasonableness. And Union Electric, Union Electric actually said that.
But the policy that you adopted and applied in these cases, there's no, as Judge Rogers was suggesting, was never applied to such an extreme variation, probably one that hasn't occurred since something like 1933. Around then.
You can see that.
And that you couldn't possibly have contemplated in adopting the policy. I mean, it would have been extremely prescient of you to have done so. And you'd all be very rich people at this point if you had done that. So it does seem to me that you've done something exactly what the APA contemplates. You've noticed a fact, highly material to the decision, post-record, and then denied someone an opportunity to object to it. All the APA requires is that you hear their objection.
And we did hear their objection.
Well, you can't have it both ways. You rejected their objection. You rejected their submission.
Yeah. We rejected the affidavit, but the actual language. The actual argument that was made.
But the evidence. But the rule in 556 is that they have a right to introduce evidence. And I think that's the.
We assumed that. If you read the discussion in the rehearing order at those pages I cited, JA 86, 89, the commission assumed that the evidence was correct. It said, we understand what you're saying here. And in fact, it was exactly the same as what was in the affidavit, just the affidavit got knocked out as a matter of procedure.
Well, it isn't saying we read the affidavit and we understand what the expert is saying. They rejected the affidavit, so they have no idea what's in the affidavit, presumably, except to the extent that counsel, in their filings, made these general arguments.
Made the word for word, I mean, as is very common, the language in the rehearing request tracked the language in the affidavit, and the commission acknowledged the argument, and it assumed, for the sake of argument, it was true. So that I just don't see how there could be a notice problem in that situation.
Here's what their reply brief says, that FERC did not address, one, the central points in his affidavit, such as the gravity of the economic downturn.
Well, they don't like how
the movement
they
of
don't
public
like how we,
and private bond rates in opposite directions and the magnitude of that spread.
They don't like how we came out, but on page 86 in the rehearing order, we say, Southern California argues that during 2008, the rates were inversely related, not rationally related, and we discussed the argument in some detail. So we were aware of the argument. We addressed the argument.
And where's it just says SoCal contends that, I agree about this other point about inversely related, but they said despite the unique economic situation in 2008, the commission found no compelling reason to deviate.
Right, and we say, we agree that there was a unique economic situation, but we do have compelling reasons to consistently apply our policy. One,
regardless of what happens.
Not to start reopening these cases, and two, because it's within the zone of reasonableness. And Union Electric, which is the last time the court dealt with this kind of.
Yeah, but there's lots of money involved.
The zone in this case was very wide.
Yeah, so it's not.
Yeah, but the Union Electric didn't discuss the breadth of the zone. Union Electric
and there was a movement of 400 basis points, something like that.
That was the breadth of the zone being different was brought up in the reply brief. It was not in the press for rehearing. It was not in the initial brief.
So that issue is really not before the court.
No, I'm just saying the application of the policy without regard to the proposed submission in this instance illustrates how material, how important the change can be, and makes it more peculiar to turn a deaf ear to it.
I think that's kind of looking at it through the wrong end of the telescope. There was a big change in the economy, but the change for Southern California Edison was within the zone of reasonableness. And what the commission
ever before considered economic evidence of divergence between the cost of private and government capital?
Well, actually, in the Boston Edison case in the First Circuit, which we discuss in some detail in the rehearing, that question was raised, and the commission applied its consistent policy in spite of evidence of divergence, and the First Circuit said, it doesn't matter. Yet the end result is within the zone of reasonableness. We're not going to get into the details of this.
So we'd be
and
back
that's what we're asking.
Judge Ginsburg asked you a while ago, no matter how compelling the evidence of an outlier, as long as it wound up with a result somewhere within the zone, the commission didn't have to reconsider.
That's the case. Well, it's certainly the First Circuit's view, and I think if you read Union Electric, it's the view of this court as well. Union Electric made very clear that was an anomalous case and said on page 1204 of that opinion, the effect of our decision is quite limited. It does not draw into question the commission's past practice of making post-hearing adjustments within a range of reasonableness previously determined on the record, and then it cites Boston Edison. So I think the case law is on our side on that. Again, these are really hyper-technical points.
Excuse me, what were the facts in Boston? How much of a change was there?
I don't recall how much of a change there was. But the fact is the court said even if there was not much of a numerical correlation at all, it didn't matter because the end result is what counts, and that language is clearly in there.
The end result, that's the Hope Natural Gas standard.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
It's only the end result that counts when, in this context, but when they come in with an objection to your methodological change and they say it's only the result that counts, we're still in the zone, you say you didn't do it the way we want to do it.
Well, it's because it's up to the commission to pick the zone. As this court and
they were in the zone with their methodological
change. Yeah, but it's up to the commission to decide which point within the zone is the just and reasonable point. That's just the reason that the courts don't want to get involved in this kind of thing. The courts have recognized that it's inherently somewhat arbitrary, it's inherently subjective, and you're taking a general amorphous standard of just and reasonable, and you're having to apply it to specific dollars and cents situation. And the commission gave its reasons here, and it should be affirmed for them.
I agree, but that's what happens. And it would just be helpful if you all, when you buried the bodies, covered the graves a little better.
I will take that point back to the commission, Your Honor. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Counsel for petitioner.
Your Honor, when all is said and done, the central point that we tried to make here, that there's no basis for discriminating against a single applicant in comparison to a group, remains on the table and remains unaddressed. Yes, there are rationales for the midpoint and the median, why one might be better than the other. But the question is, having said the midpoint is appropriate for all utilities of diverse risk, high and low, why it would not be appropriate for a utility of average risk that's proposed it?
Well, I'm expecting to find the answer to that in the statistical treatises cited in those two prior cases. Will I not be satisfied?
I don't think you'll be satisfied.
What will I find instead?
I tried to go down that road, and I think they're just definitions of what these things are, but not how they're appropriate for this kind of economic analysis. That's my recollection of what's there.
This may be such a basic question, but an individual utility, does it have the option to wait to file with a group as distinct from waiting to file or going ahead and filing individually?
We covered that in our brief. The problem is that there are other members of the group that make up their own minds and do whatever they think is in their interest. And so as Edison is confronted with a situation, and we cite the cases where other companies have already applied individually or made deals individually, and it's not open to us to apply as a group. So we have the problem, the central problem of the...
It's open to you, but you can't get anybody else to agree with you to file at that time.
I think that's the problem.
I see.
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, you gave an example of being in a settlement, too.
Settlement, yeah.
You might be bound by a settlement that was entered
yeah,
into.
Yeah, the other companies may be bound by a settlement.
They might be, right.
Right, not us.
I mean, I assume those statistical treatises are going to talk about why the measurement of the central tendency through a median is a more accurate measure, but not necessarily tell us why an electrical utility filing singly. But I guess the point is that since these are discretionary policy choices, if the commission has this, what I'll call expert analysis, to back its decision as to a single utility, why isn't that sufficient?
Because the commission has already exercised its discretion and analyzed the issues and said that the midpoint is just and reasonable for high, low, and middle utilities in a group. It has to have a reason that single utilities would be different, and it hasn't supplied that other than, well, they're single. It's circular, and there's nothing there. Now, the gas cases came in during the my colleague's argument, and I didn't have a chance to address them. The gas cases, first of all, the commission has distinguished them in the past repeatedly and said these two industries are not alike. Second, it's done so by saying the growth rates are different in the two industries and the dividend payouts, the dividend yields are different. Well, those are the two factors that make up the rate of return.
Well, I thought, I know you object, but intervener points out they were at different stages of reorganization.
And they were at different stages. And there's no analysis that we have in front of us today from the commission explaining that they're at the same state of evolution or deregulation or regulation. They didn't address that, and they haven't presented that argument in this court. So the gas case, in the gas cases, they have a limited proxy group of only five or six members, so that the ability to use screens to screen out outliers is different. And lastly, what's most startling is in the gas cases, the gas utility came in and asked for the median. The shape of the industry was so different that it was the utility that was asking for it as an incentive to investment, the median, which was higher than the midpoint. And there was an incentive. Now it's being used as an impediment to investment by giving a lower number through the median. So it's really not an analogous circumstance. On the second issue, the APA was invoked in our initial brief. We explained that Union Electric relied on the APA, and we followed through on that argument. There's really not a procedural problem with the updating, in that there's an opportunity if the initial decision addresses extra record evidence, there's an opportunity in the rehearing petition to deal with it. So we have the mechanism, and that's what happened in Union Electric. That's what happened in Boston Edison, and it's enough. Finally, the concept that it's within the zone of reasonableness, so therefore we can act in a procedural manner that is not...
Let me ask you one other question. Intervenor makes the point that on a motion for reconsideration, if you introduce new evidence at that point, other parties don't have a chance to respond, whereas if you had moved to reopen the record, then other parties would have an opportunity to respond.
Our brief has precedent saying they can ask the commission for an opportunity to respond, and there are cases saying that when an affidavit comes in on rehearing, they do get the opportunity to respond.
Thank you. Anything further?
Coming back to this final point about the component and the zone, the problem here is that we came in with a rate which was within the zone at the outset, and that was the initial decision of the commission. It was attacked on the grounds that your component is bad, the way you do it. Now, it was the only component in issue. It led directly to what the rate was, and it was attacked by the interveners essentially saying you can't use that component, and you've got to use the median instead. So in this case, the issues are fused. They're essentially the same issue. What is an unreasonable rate and what is an unreasonable way of calculating the rate are essentially the same issue. And it's not an issue that we've raised. We've asked, we made a rate filing. We came in and it was lowered by 200 basis points. Why should it be lowered unless somebody can show that the rate or the methodology was unjust and unreasonable? Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the case under advisement.